The Supreme Court hears a case today on homelessness, what options local governments have, and what rights unhoused people have. On one side is the town of Grants Pass, Oregon. It has been arresting and fining people for sleeping in public parks. But a federal appeals court ruled that that was cruel and unusual punishment if homeless persons had nowhere else to go. We get two views now. First, the argument against the appeals court ruling that it, quote, limits the punishment the government may impose. For that, we bring in Patty Mulvihill, Executive Director of the League of Oregon Cities. Patty, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Your amicus brief on your side writes that based on the appeals court ruling, local governments have limited options to protect the health and safety of communities housed and unhoused. How are local governments' hands tied, in your view?
That's a great question, and I would like to start by saying the League and Oregon Cities aren't on the side of criminally punishing anyone. That's somewhat of a false narrative that's being pushed. Cities are in the business at their core of protecting the health, the safety, and the welfare of their residents. There's nothing healthy or safe about these public encampments, either for the people who live in them or for the residents at large. And so the cities in Oregon and other jurisdictions are upset with the Ninth Circuit's decision because it's constraining the ways in which we can properly respond to what is a very real homelessness crisis in this country. So first, the court has said that its ruling only applies to people who have nowhere else to go. So they are involuntarily homeless. So for example, if I was somebody who was experiencing homelessness and I'm stopped by a city official because I'm sleeping or lying in a public space, if I could go to a friend's house or a family member's house, am I still not having a place to go? Does the ruling still apply to me? We don't know that answer.
Are there concrete, specific examples of what a city in Oregon wants to do and right now it cannot?
It doesn't know what it can do. So we don't know if we can require somebody to remove a campsite every 24 or 48 hours. We're guessing if we can prohibit certain types of encampments because we don't have any clarity from the rules. So we're just taking our best concerted guess and then still getting sued even when we do everything right.
I understand. Okay. And in practical terms, what are the options some of these Oregon cities want to do? Do they ideally, at the right time for policy reasons, seeking to impose fines, and if they have to put unhoused people in jail if they're not kind of adhering to what the cities are asking them to do?
That's a last resort option for most of our cities. Cities are starting from a baseline perspective of we need to help those experiencing homelessness and we need to prevent it from getting worse. Public parks and public facilities are designed for everybody to use, and they weren't designed to be living quarters. You know, there's not bathrooms, there's not facilities that necessarily work. So it's not fair to say that cities are looking for fines and jail time because they want to punish homeless people. They're trying to balance competing interests in the best possible way for all residents, housed and unhoused.
I understand. Now, the council president of Grants Pass in Oregon, relevant to this case here, said back in 2013 that fining homeless persons would, quote, make it uncomfortable enough for them in our city, so they will want to move on down the road. Is that really a solution to pass the problem on to the next town?
No, that's not a solution. And it's also not fair to take a cherry-picked quote from one member of a council. If you read the case at its core, I would argue that it doesn't allow for regional collaboration to occur. So, for example, the court says that if there's no shelter bed available in your jurisdiction, the city can't do anything. But that prevents cities from them working collaboratively together with other cities and counties to take limited resources and create one service-provided central location for people to go.
And finally, you know, we spoke to one housing official on the other side of the country in Burlington, Vermont, on this program on Friday, and she told us that criminalizing the act of sleeping outdoors, in her view, makes the problem worse. It makes it harder for persons to later on get jobs, to later on get housing. Do you have a response to that?
I would go back to, again, Oregon cities aren't interested in criminalizing homelessness. They've invested hundreds of millions of dollars in trying to prevent it and trying to address it. What Oregon cities are attempting to do is to provide healthy and safe communities for all of their residents, both housed and unhoused. And right now, the Ninth Circuit's opinion has created so much vagueness and so much uncertainty. We don't know whether to go left, to go right, or to move ahead. And so what we're asking for is some semblance of structured guidance on what we can do to comply with the Constitution, but still provide for the public safety, the public health, and the public welfare of our residents.
Patty Mulvihill is Executive Director of the League of Oregon Cities. Patty, thanks very much for the time.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
Let's bring in another perspective now. Diane Yentel is President and CEO of the National Low Income Housing Coalition. The group joined an amicus brief in the SCOTUS case, arguing that punishing people for sleeping outside fails to address the root causes of homelessness and violates the Eighth Amendment of the Constitution. Diane, thanks for being with us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
First, what's your reaction to what you just heard from the League of Oregon Cities, that they don't want to criminalize homelessness, but spaces like parks aren't designed as living quarters?
Listen, homelessness at its root is about a lack of affordable housing. And people are homeless because they don't have access to decent, safe, affordable homes. Nationally, there is a shortage of over 7 million homes, affordable and available to people with the lowest incomes. So another way of saying that same number is for every 10 of the lowest income renters, there are fewer than 4 apartments affordable and available to them. And in Grants Pass, it's worse. In Grants Pass, for every 10 of the lowest income renters, there are just 2 apartments affordable and available to them. And contrary to what your previous guest said, the city is ticketing and arresting and fining people. And this does nothing to solve their individual homelessness. It actually worsens their homelessness.
Do you have a story? Your organization has been listening to the stories of the people in Grants Pass, Oregon, who are living in some of these encampments. Can you give us a story about one of those people you just mentioned who's getting ticketed and or arrested?
Yes, actually, there's a woman named Amber who lives in Grants Pass. She's been homeless since the pandemic, when she lost her job as a housekeeper and has been unable to get employment since. She sleeps in a public park in Grants Pass. And in the last 18 months, she's received 30 tickets for sleeping in a park because she has no place else to do, to go. And each of those tickets costs $295. So over the last 18 months, Grants Pass has fined Amber a total of about $9,000. So not only is the city of Grants Pass not doing anything to address her homelessness with real solutions, they're making it worse by digging her into a hole of debt that she may never be able to climb back out of.
On the other hand, local governments say they're being pressured by residents who live near these public parks and businesses who say there's concerns about litter, about waste, and about safety. How do you respond to that?
Nobody wants people to be homeless, and certainly nobody wants people who are homeless to have no place else to sleep than a park or a sidewalk. Nobody wants that. And so to resolve that, to address homelessness, we have to look to actual solutions, because arresting or ticketing people who have no choice but to sleep outside just pushes them further into poverty, makes it harder for them to secure work, makes it harder for them to secure housing, and makes it harder for us as a nation to address homelessness. So we have to recognize the root cause of homelessness being a lack of affordable housing and focus our attention in local communities and from the federal government on solutions that can make homes affordable to all of our neighbors, including those with the lowest incomes.
Your group has actually done quite a bit of work digging through the data on the lack of affordable homes. What have you found?
Yes, there is that shortage of over 7 million homes affordable and available to people with the lowest incomes. So another way of saying that same number, for every 10 of the lowest income renters, there are fewer than 4 apartments affordable and available to them. And what that means is that over half of people with the lowest incomes, so people working low-wage jobs or people with disabilities or seniors on very limited fixed incomes, they are left to double or triple up with other low-income families. They're left to live in uninhabitable housing, or they're spending 50, 60, 70% of their income for rent. And when you have such limited income to begin with, and you pay so much of it to keep a roof over your head, you are always one financial shock, whether it's a broken down car, a missed day of work, an unexpected medical bill, away from missing rent, facing eviction, and in worst cases, becoming homeless. And this is what has been happening across our country, and especially in recent years, where we saw rents skyrocketing at unprecedented rates, and we had increased costs, historic inflation. All of this really squeezed people with the lowest incomes the most. And that's why we've seen an increase in homelessness over the last year.
Diane Yentel is president and CEO of the National Low Income Housing Coalition. Diane, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.